Friesel. Wilbek scores against his old club.
Hello, and thank you for listening. Thank you for downloading. You are with us here at the Clock End Talk and Arsenal Podcast. I take over once again as Tez is missing today, and I am joined by Tony. How are you doing, Tony?
I'm good, thanks. Yourself?
Doing well, thank you. And we have Savvy with us as well. How are you doing, Savvy?
Yeah, I'm doing very good. How about you?
thank you. So it's good to be back. It's been a while since we guys have recorded. We have this flurry of fixtures incoming, so we will keep everyone updated as to when and where we record. But straight away, we'll get into the Southampton game. A tough day for the traveling fans, so Tony will talk to us about that a little bit. But let's start with the lineups. What do you think of the lineup, Tony? Were you just expecting a straight swap for Mustafi, who was suspected to be injured? Or were you hoping for a change of system, perhaps?
No, I mean, that team pretty much picked itself. He sees it as our strongest 11. They haven't played for 8 days, that 11. So we always say football's about getting your best 11 on the pitch wherever possible. And if that's what he sees as our best 11, then with 8 days off, obviously minus Mustafi, with 8 days off, they're all fit and ready to play, so I'm not at all surprised. Personally, for me, I've been a big fan, not a big fan, I've been a fan of Mertesacker over the year, because I think he leads the line quite well. Not leads the line, as in striker, he manages the defensive line quite well. But if you're going to defend high, if you're expecting a lot of ball, which we were, and we're going to defend high up to try and squeeze the pitch, he's definitely not the man for the job. Also, I don't see what we're gaining by playing him. Is he better than Holding or Chambers? Maybe 2%. We know we're losing him at the end of the season. We know we potentially could get another 15 years out of Holding and Chambers. So I see no disadvantage into playing one of them two. Also, Koscielny's been a bit shaky with the ball as of recently. And obviously when we go more into this game, I'll talk about that again. So switching him to the middle of the back three and putting either a Holding or a Chambers outside him, again, wouldn't have been there in the world. It may be a bit of hindsight because I probably wasn't moaning when the lineup came out, but I just don't really see the benefits of playing Mertesacker. For me, the main benefit of playing Mertesacker now is with the young players so that he can build them up. So playing him with a Holding or a Chambers or a Maitland-Niles or whoever else, Reece Nelson. I don't actually see any real benefits of playing him in a first-team fixture.
I agree with you. Or, I mean, just to add to what you said, or if you're playing someone, you know, like a Peter Crouch, someone who is an aerial threat, and Mertesacker is someone who offers height. But I take your point completely. I'm with you on the lineup as well. I don't think anyone disputed the fact that this was a lineup that was not expected. I think, as you said, the lineup picks itself these days, in the Premier League especially. But Savvy, how did you feel about the lineup? I know there were already some, you know, some sort of inclining to sort of bring in Jack into the team and maybe move around the defenders, especially if, you know, Mustafi was unavailable. What do you think of the lineup?
Yeah, actually, I personally expected Chambers or Holding to start. I didn't expect us to change the formation because obviously defensively we have been doing well mostly. If we take out the individual errors from our game. So, but I wasn't expecting Mertesacker because recently what I have seen of him in away games, he always struggles. And everybody knows he struggles with pace. So I wasn't expecting him to start. And Chambers and Holding both had a good game in midweek. So I expected Chambers to start. And rest of the lineup, yeah, as we said, they picked themselves. So that was the only thing which I didn't like about the lineup, but otherwise it was okay. But how Mertesacker performed, so I think it showed we should have started. And the surprising thing was that even the Holding or Chambers, they weren't even on the bench, so that was surprising. There was no centre back on the bench, so I don't know why they were missing. Is there an injury or something? But I expected one of them to start.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. In fact, I don't think there was a fullback on the bench either. I think the only one who could fill in for a potential injury in fullback
was Maitland-Niles.
Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, a few question marks on the lineup and on the bench there for sure. Starting with the game, Tony. Again, slow start. I mean, you know, it feels like within the first 10 minutes, we just never seem to find our groove. We're never, forced to those 50-50s. Maybe I'm being a little harsh here, but I mean, conceding a goal in the second, third minute is unacceptable, right? Despite who you're playing.
I think we were so keen to start foot due to what happened last week against United that we sort of overcommitted. We started as if we were 1-0 down and chasing the game. I've seen a lot of people that kind of share your view about conceding early on shouldn't happen and whatnot, but it's just another minute of the game. It's the same as the first minute, as the 52nd minute, as the 76th. It's just a minute of the game. If you could say, oh, we'll play like this and not concede in the first, then you could repeat that for 90 minutes and sort of never concede, obviously, in an idealistic world. But yeah, I think we just started off, and Wenger alluded to it in his interview. He said, oh, we needed a strong start after last week. But I think where this team is so attacking, just in general, Arsenal have been for a long, long time, that we see a strong start as going ahead and scoring and dominating the ball. But certain places you go to, a strong start is still being in the game after 15 minutes. Anfield's the one. We never get anything at Anfield because a strong start at Anfield is, I know it's going off topic from the Southampton game, but a strong start at Anfield is quieting down the crowd and taking the sting out of the game in the first 15 minutes. We just don't do that. And it was the same yesterday. We thought, oh, we'll start off strong by trying to attack and score and kill the game early. But that's, as I said, that's not, there's more than one way to have a strong start. It's not ideal conceding that early, and we were a shambles, but I don't think it was the players weren't ready. I think it was just the mentality they went out with was very bad.
But that has to be questioned, though. I understand the point you're trying to make, and I think it's a valid one. And I think Wenger also said in his post-match interview or his press conference that, you know, some of the players maybe couldn't get the Man United game out of their heads. But when you have a full week off, or in this case, 8 days off, which is a luxury in December, let's not kid ourselves about that, especially when you're involved in a European competition, you have got to think, and I mean, of course, we'll get into the individual performances, you have got to think that there has to be some sort of, you know, motivation, whether that's, you know, that self-driven motivation or from the manager. You have to question that early in the game, you know, that there has been something that's gone missing or that has gone unaddressed, because it wasn't a brilliant goal. It was off, you know, the ball went into touch, a simple sequence followed, and Mertesacker got on the wrong side of Tadic, and he slipped in an easy ball for Austin, who finished easily. I mean, the whole sequence of events, when you look at it, it just seems so Arsenal, and it just seems so textbook that you almost all, you know, expected going away from home, and our away record has been in the gutter in the last, well, I would argue, this whole year, perhaps.
Yeah, there's not much there you can disagree with, but I don't think the Man United game was in there. It's an excuse because a similar thing happened. I think, look, they've obviously been told we lost that game in the first 15 minutes last week, which is evident to anyone that's ever watched a football match. You don't even have to watch the match. You just have to look at the score sheet and it tells you United were 2-0 up after 10 minutes. And the game from then against a decent team, you're always going to struggle. But I don't think the players went into that thinking, oh, last week this happened against United. What they may have been thinking is, as I said, we need a strong start. But it's just what Arsenal as a club seem to see as a strong start is what I mentioned before, is going ahead and taking a lead, which, yes, would be ideal, and it is a strong start, but horses for courses and all that. As I said, sometimes being at 0-0 after 15 minutes is a good start, but we don't have that mentality. We have the mentality of we're a better side than them, which we are, so a strong start would be scoring. And I think the fan base, both in the ground and at home watching it, probably contribute to that problem. Because if we'd done absolutely nothing for the first 15 minutes, but had been 0-0, we'd controlled the ball but not created anything, they hadn't had a sniff either, people would go, oh, boring, we're playing it sideways, we're playing it round. But that's better than being 1-0 down as we were. So I think, I'm not blaming the fans at all, and I'm obviously one of them, but I think we, as a club, including the fan base, we need a switch in mentality that just because we're not scoring and not creating chances doesn't mean it's a bad performance.
No, I think you're right there. We are pretty spoiled. I mean, down the years, some of the performances and some of the, you know, some of the string of results that we've seen has really spoiled us for quality. And, you know, we demand some of the most exquisite football. So I do understand that. Moving to Savvy, the first half was flat. We created one chance from what I remember, which was an Aaron Ramsey shot. And albeit a good one, I think Hector did well to find him in the box, on top of the box. And he forced a save, a decent save from Fraser Foster. But other than that, I don't really remember anything that sticks out. How would you summarize our performance in the first half?
I think it wasn't very good, and we were very bad defensively, very, very bad. The defense was all over the place. And as I think Tony said before, when we are pushing forward and our defensive line is going high up, Mertesacker is not just the player to be there because he struggles with pace, and any ball over the top, over him, he's always going to struggle. And he, at times in the first half, he was nowhere in the picture because the ball is hit over him and he just couldn't manage anything because he just couldn't get back due to his lack of pace. And then I think we had a penalty shout in the first half, which I think was a penalty. Otherwise, we didn't create anything. Ramsey was unlucky. And I think that cross to Ramsey by Bellerin, I think that was the best thing Bellerin did in the whole 90 minutes. And then, I think defensively, we have to be strong. Individual errors, they are costing us every time. We have to take that out of our game because it's costing us too many goals. And we knew that before that this game is going to be tough. I think we haven't we have won just one away game at Southampton in last six visits. So we should have expected that it would be a difficult game and they'll come at us, and the crowd with home ground behind that, they are always going to be very tough proposition. But I think we didn't manage that well. We conceded early, then we were trying. They knew they can park the bus, and they did just that. Even actually, we were lucky to go just one goal down at the break because they had numerous chances in the first half, and they could have easily been 2-3 ahead. So yeah, we can only blame ourselves for that.
Yeah, I think you're right. There were instances where we did seem quite open in the back, excuse me. Yeah. And I mean, I've always complained about the midfield being empty in this formation. Tony raised a couple of points, you know, over the past couple of weeks that Xhaka is maintaining a position which is quite up the field. And I noticed yesterday that there were times when he was going up, but yesterday Aaron Ramsey was almost playing like a second striker. There were moments where, you know, we would try to circulate the ball and rotate the ball within our half to try and move their defensive lines and try to find a place where we can break them down from. But it felt like there was no support for him in midfield, and Ramsey was loitering around the box and trying to find spaces there.
But I think that was down to the fact that we were one goal down and we were desperate to score. So I think that's why he was bombing forward. If the score had been 0-0, I think he wouldn't be going or pushing that much. But obviously, with Aaron Ramsey, there have been complaints that he bombs forward a lot. So that's debatable too. So
yeah, I mean, I understand the need for it, but if you're not being found by your teammates, you have got to try something else. I mean, we'll get into some of this stuff in terms of the tactics, maybe a little while on from now. But I want to get to Tony and talk about the second half. Tony, did you expect any changes at half, considering the football we were playing and how ineffective we were?
No, not really. I mean, look, we know he doesn't change things at halftime. We knew he was gonna. Well, I mean, what he likes to do is get into the players' heads and remind them of the way he wants them to play, and give them 15 or so minutes to see if they. Because obviously, clearly, he's not told Ramsey to be playing pretty much on Lacazette's toes, so. I mean, it's a problem with Arsenal that we've had for a long time, is that we try and react too quickly. So we go 1-0 down, and then we try and straight away we go all guns blazing to try and get back in the game. And more often than not, it ends us going 2-0 down. So I think what Wenger would have done at half-time is reminded Ramsey that he is a centre midfielder. And I'm not really digging out Ramsey, because I didn't think he had a bad game. I thought he was all right. He'd have reminded Ramsey that he's a centre midfielder. He'd have got the team to keep control of the ball rather than just trying to bomb on and score with every time we had the ball, and give them 15 minutes to see if it worked things out. And then from then, he would have hoped we got back in the game and let things carry on. Or if not, and as has happened, he was going to make the change after sort of 60, 65 minutes. I don't know what minute he made the changes, but I'd be amazed if I was far wrong, just because I know how he works. So I wasn't expecting anything to change at halftime. And that's the way it panned out.
Were you surprised to see Welbeck come in and place himself on the right wing? I mean, that's one place we've seen him before, but it feels like he's a little more ineffective, perhaps.
To be honest, I called it as soon as they called Welbeck back and he ran along the touchline and got changed. And I called it, and a few people around me, I called the exact sub and what he was going to do. And again, I'm not saying I know more than everyone else, but a few people around me looked at me like I was an alien. But it looked like the obvious choice. Mertesacker was always going to come off because, look, we were going to change to a 4-2-3-1. And Mertesacker's the one that's expandable because you can't defend high up with him in the team. And then once you change to a 4-2-3-1, Alexis is going to play on the left. Ozil's going to play at 10. So you're either going to put Lacazette out on the right, which isn't going to happen, or Welbeck. So I saw it happening before it happened. I wasn't at all surprised. I actually agree with you. I don't think Welbeck is the most effective on the right. But I think in that situation, it was probably the logical change. If you take for 100% we was going to change to 4-2-3-1, then I don't see what would have been a more suitable change because we had no one. Possibly Iwobi, but he doesn't have the goal threat. And he plays in front of the defence. And that was our problem. We had all of the ball in front of the Southampton back line. Whereas Welbeck stretches him and tries to get him behind and runs the channels well. So it was a straight choice between him and Iwobi. But for what the game needed, I think it was the right change. As much as I agree with you that Welbeck isn't brilliant on the right.
What followed were introductions for Jack and eventually for Giroud. We saw us going into full attack mode, and there might have been instances where we were left open because of, throwing numbers forward. No taking away from the fact that Giroud did a very, very good job in getting that header in and getting us that point. But other than that, I really cannot recall a single thing that stood out from yesterday's performance. Am I being too pessimistic here, Tony?
I think we created, I don't even want to say half chances. One of you or both of you just said that Ramsey was the only thing we created in the first half. And I can see where you're coming from, but I watched the game back this morning. Obviously, because I always say the game, it's a completely different game when you watch it in the ground. So I always watch it back on TV as well and see if I spot anything different or to see what people that have watched it on TV are talking about, because they'll notice things that I haven't and I'll notice things that they haven't. Lacazette had a really good chance in the first half when he done unbelievably well. Sanchez absolutely smashed the ball at Xhaka's head and somehow he cushioned the header into Lacazette, and then Lacazette was in a nothing position and he worked it really well to get a shot in. But once he got the shot in, it was quite poor. He sort of rolled it on the half volley at Forster from about 8 yards. And it's not a criticism because he shouldn't have even got the chance in. He'd done so well to make the chance for himself. But once he got to that position, it's actually I'm not going to say a bad miss. It was a very bad effort. And I think we had a few occasions like that. I guess we're going to come on to it at some point. I don't think it was a penalty. And I also think Lacazette should have done better in the first half. So I think... No, were we good? No. Are people going over the top about being pessimistic? In my opinion, yes. Did we want to win? Of course we did. Did I want to win? Of course I wanted us to win. But it wasn't like battered for 89 minutes and then got a fluke goal off someone's arsehole in the 90th minute. We maybe didn't create chances, but that was because against a packed event, we dominated the ball. They were tactically very good. I don't think a lot of people have given him credit for that. They pretty much let us have the ball wide all day, knowing that whichever side it goes, the in the box is only going to be either Lacazette and Sanchez, who are both 5'7", or Ozil and Lacazette, one of being 5'7", the other one doesn't know what his head is for. Well, it's for thinking, and he's very good at that, but heading it is not. He's not going to do that. So I think they managed the game very well. And I think Southampton deserve more credit. And it's not me coming out of it saying, oh, I'm happy with a draw. But I don't think we was as bad as people are making out.
Savvy, Alexis gave the ball away 32 times yesterday. That's two less than you know he gave away against Manchester United. And that's something that a lot of Arsenal fans are now referring to as the Alexis tax, you know, that he will inevitably, you know, do that. And it's understandable because he is the one who's trying to create and he is the one taking the risk. Having seen what he is doing over the course of the game and then arguably turning it around almost with that assist, what do you feel about Alexis? Do you think he deserves an opportunity to keep featuring, not be substituted despite some of, you know, the performances he puts in? And do you feel the manager feels vindicated after delivering an assist like that?
Look, I personally think he should be dropped because I know it was a very good cross for the goal we scored. The only goal we scored. But I think he tried to cross the ball many times. He gave that away. And sometimes he gave that away foolishly where he just could have passed it to Xhaka or Ramsey who was just standing next to him. But he tried to be too clever, tried to be too selfish and just gave the ball away. And secondly, the reason I want him to be dropped is he's not at all playing for the team because earlier, last season, I remember he used to track back a lot. He used to help defensively the team, help the left back. But recently, especially this season, he is not doing anything. He's just standing up there, waiting for the ball to come to him, and then he can do a few tricks and can. Then he tries offensively. Obviously, he's a very good player. He's a world-class player, but he's not playing for the team. So I want him to be dropped. Kolasinac, I hardly remember in the last two games where he helped Kolasinac in defending or something. He did good for the team defensively. So I clearly want him to be dropped because I know he's a very good player. He can pop up with a goal and assist at a very crucial time. But definitely there are players who can play for the team better. And I want a player who plays for my team. I don't want a player who's playing for himself. So that's my reason.
Thoughts, Johnny?
I've not heard the expression Alexis tax before, but I pretty much it hits a nail on the head. Like when Giroud's on the touchline waiting to come on, the only two options were Lacazette and Sanchez to come off realistically, and I think Wenger got the right one because obviously Sanchez has vindicated that by his assist, he's more likely to create something. Lacazette's more likely to put the ball in the net, I would say, but at that. What we needed was something to be created rather than anything else. He is very frustrating. I've moaned about him as much as anyone else and for as long as anyone else. But the Alexis tax is a great way to put it. He's a match winner, but he's very frustrating. It's a tough one. Do I want him to be dropped? Probably. Do I think we could be a better team without him? Yes, but I can guarantee you that if we drop him and lose, or like I even remember last year at Liverpool away, we bring him on at half time, and because of his attitude, he was dropped. And people were moaning, oh, we lost that game because Alexis didn't start. I think as a fan base, and just football in general, it's not even a criticism of Arsenal fans, they will say one thing, and then when that doesn't work, they'll blame absolutely everyone else. So there's probably a large proportion of the Arsenal fan base at the moment saying, I want Alexis dropped. But then if we go and lose and he doesn't feature, there'll be a chance and Iwobi misses, for example, and they'll go, oh, Alexis would have done better there. Or we could have used Alexis's work rate or this, that and the other. So it's a difficult one. Personally, yeah, I would like to see him drop. But I'm also aware of the ramifications from it. And it is a tough one. It's a lot tougher decision than I think people are making out. And as I said, I think at the time yesterday that the sub was made, I think Wenger made the right choice. And there was people around me booing. But as I said, one of them two had to come off. And for me, if Lacazette would have stayed on the pitch, yes, he might have been likely to score a chance, but I don't think we would have made anything. So, and I think yesterday is a bit harsh on on Sanchez in terms of the amount he gave the ball away. As Savvy said that he had a lot of unsuccessful crosses, which contributed in that 32 times he gave the ball away. But as I touched on earlier, his targets were 5'7" and Mesut Ozil. David Beckham would have unsuccessful crosses with them two in the box.
But isn't that a part of the decision making? That okay, we understand that he might not have the high supply in the box, but at the same time, then shouldn't he be choosing to decide otherwise? Yesterday from what I saw, and I only had one viewing, but it felt like we were playing 2 feet. We hardly created any space. And we hardly exploited space. Now, guaranteed that there was not a lot of space behind the back four. And I perhaps remember only twice or thrice when we actually got behind the defensive line and were able to create something. But there was very little movement off the ball. There was very little, you could see players with their arms ahead and trying to signal to their teammates to move around. And it just felt as if it was too flat. And when you have something like that, then you just cannot heave a ball into the box and hope for the best, especially, as you said, when you don't have the height.
This is where I think the problem came with Alexis. And I don't really particularly feel like defending him, because I don't like the bloke. But he was trying different things. And I've said on this podcast many a times, I don't mind players giving the ball away as such if they're trying something, or it's the risk versus reward. So he may have tried some through balls. I remember a couple ways tried to dink it in behind. They're not crosses. He's tried a through ball and it's been cut out. But you think, at least he's trying something. He's trying to be inventive. He could have given that ball 2 yards to someone else. And yes, his statistics for giving the ball away would have been a lot less. But also, we would have no chance of creating anything. Like, for example, that cross he did put in that we scored from, Kolasinac was on for a 2-yard ball. He could have done that, but he's the type of player that's going to take risks, and sometimes it's going to be as frustrating as hell, and other times it's going to create stuff. I think, and it's going off Sanchez, but an issue, and it goes on to what you just said, an issue we've had for a long, long time is when a team defends deep against us and we're struggling, our players seem to go in this mode of, we've got Ozil, he's pretty good, let's give him the ball and hope. And I've been saying this the amount of time I feel sorry for him, because we just give him the ball and think, he can pick a pass. And everyone else just stands and looks at him. And it wasn't so bad yesterday, but it did happen to an extent. And it happened to get with Alexis as well, that people were giving him the ball and thinking, he can go and beat a player. Let's watch him do it. But if everyone else is standing watching, as you said, there's no movement. It's like there was no plan. Southampton were very clever in letting us go wide because they knew the crosses couldn't come in. So then after that, we just went to default, give it to Ozil, give it to Sanchez, and pretty much hope. So did I think Sanchez was bad yesterday? Yes. Would I drop him? Probably yes, but it's a tough one. But I think the criticism has been harsher than it probably should have been.
I think that's a fair point. And I think that's enough on Alexis, because the less said, the better. Everyone knows how he feels. Everyone knows what he wants out of his, out of his future in football. So I think we just need to see where this goes. And come January, we need to see whether he'll continue being a part of this for starting 11, even if he signs, a contract somewhere else. Before we move ahead and discuss the Bate game just a little bit, it would be tragic not to talk about Olivier Giroud, just because when we needed a spark, he comes off the bench yet again. I think this is, if I'm not wrong, his 10th goal this year, this calendar year, after the 80th minute, which just tells us that he comes off and comes off the bench and provides something, whether it's an equalizer or in most cases a winning goal. And I think that Lacazette and Giroud rotation, if you will, is something that that can be a good weapon for us. And I confess, I said last week on the pod that Giroud's time at Arsenal might be over because he didn't look motivated enough in some of the cup games. But Savvy, yesterday Giroud really showed that he is capable of, providing that X factor and rescuing a point for us from time to time.
Yeah, I think he's the best super sub in the Premier League. You could probably say he's too good to be on the bench, because obviously the strengths he has, how good he is in the air, his strength and how his hold up play. I think it's one of the best best in the world, you can say, if not in the Premier League. But I think he was, if not for Giroud, we wouldn't have scored that goal. And I think we were lucky. We are lucky to have Giroud. Otherwise, we wouldn't have scored that goal. It was a very good header. It was unstoppable. It was a very good cross by Alexis. And I hope Giroud stays on and he gets more chances to play for the first team, because he clearly deserves that.
I agree. I agree completely. One more thing, as you were saying, that came to my mind. What do you think about Fraser Forster? He's someone who has, you know, been playing for Southampton for a few years at this point. He's a big guy. He has, I mean, at least against Arsenal, he has shown in the past that he has good technique, and he's made some crucial saves for Southampton, whether that's at St. Mary's or at the Emirates. Is he someone we should be looking at?
Yeah, actually, I don't like him as a goalkeeper. Yeah, for what I remember, I think he only turns up against Arsenal. And that's with every other goalkeeper, whichever team we face, if it's a bottom half team or a mid-table team, their goalkeeper, they just turn out to be Manuel Neuer, and they just make very good saves and they start doing everything so well against us. It happens with us against every team. Otherwise, I don't rate him that highly. I think he's a good goalkeeper, but certainly we can do better than Fraser Forster.
Thoughts, Tony? Real quick?
Yeah. Don't rate him at all. Arsenal won't go anywhere near him. He's too immobile. He's massive, so he has a huge wingspan and covers a lot of goal in that sense, but he doesn't move his feet at all. So if something's out of his wingspan, regardless of how slow it is, he doesn't get there. So, as I say, I think he's 6'7". So, if he falls over and stretches his arm out, he reaches a lot of the goal, but just very slowly. Arsenal won't go anywhere near him.
All right, then there's that. Mm. All right, so I think it was a tough day at the office. Rescued a point, which, to be very honest, seems like a consolation at this point, considering our opposition. But I think Southampton did well. Tony touched upon their organization and their fortitude to not concede, and as Savvy said, Giroud with an audacious header to rescue a point for us. Let's move on to Bate, which was, of course, before the Southampton game and a fully rotated side. What do you think, Tony, of the whole game, including the lineup?
I mean, I listened. Obviously, I got dropped for last week's podcast, so I was on the bench, but I listened back to it, and I heard a few of you, I can't remember who, saying that they should play a complete kid side. And I've touched on this before, why he won't. It's because people like Giroud, like Welbeck, need minutes for when they come into the first team or come off the bench like they did on yesterday. So no surprise in the team for me. Pretty much exactly as expected. I thought he might have found a place for Nelson. He didn't, but again, it got Debuchy into the side, and the way Hector's playing, which I will touch on later, Debuchy needs minutes because Hector needs competition. So the lineup was not really a surprise to me. The performance was... Bartey are the worst team I've ever seen at the Emirates, and I've seen some bad teams at the Emirates. I've seen some League Two teams. I've seen some of the worst European teams, but Bartey, that is the worst performance I've ever seen at the Emirates. The one thing that stood out from the game for me, obviously, it was very empty. So all my friends that I don't usually sit near were sort of ringing me saying, oh, is there space near you? We'll all come and sit together. So they all came and sat with me. And Jack Wilshere, and again, I don't want to bang on about him because I probably am very biased, but he was just a complete level above everyone else. He looked like he was playing with a younger age group. Like, you know, when you're in school and they say, you're 18, go and play with the under 15s. That's what it looked like. It looked on a different wavelength to even the Arsenal players. And obviously we had Giroud, Welbeck, Walcott playing, who were international, very good players. But Wilshere just looked on a different level. That was the main takeaway from the game. And the reason I bring my friends up is I was sitting with a few friends that don't really like Jack. Obviously they like the passion and he's an Arsenal guy, but not they don't really rate him as a player. And even they were coming out saying that he looked on an absolutely different level to everyone else. which was my main takeaway from the game. The other one is that the Bushi isn't too far away from getting first team minutes, I don't think.
There's a few things you say there which I'll come back to. But real quick, Savvy, what were your thoughts on the lineup? Were you with Carl? I think Carl was the one who Tony was referring to from our last pod that was, you know, expecting to see some of the young guys. Of course, not Joe Willock. But were you expecting some young guys to feature over some of the experienced players who have been featuring in the B squad?
No, actually, I wasn't expecting that because obviously they are senior players and they are not here to sit on the bench. Obviously, they'll be looking to get some game time in the cup games, especially Europa League, League Cup or FA Cup. So it was all expected, and I expected this lineup. And I agree with Tony. I think Wiltshire was very, very, very good. He was brilliant, and it was probably the game where we could have achieve Tony's score line 10-0. We could have easily scored 10 goals in that game. It was that easy for us. And I think Walcott was good. He had a good game. Giroud was good. Wiltshire, as we said, I think Wiltshire was the best player on the pitch by a mile. And then I think Chambers had a good game. Holding was good. And most of the players did well. And it was a good performance. But that game didn't mean anything. So, obviously with those performances, some of the players will be banging on Arsene Wenger's door to get them some minutes in Premier League. And it's good for our squad because we clearly can do with some more competition in the first team.
Before I go to Tony and speak with him about Wiltshire and Debushi, who he touched upon, someone you brought up was our centre-back pairing, Savvy. And I actually thought that despite the quality of the opposition, our centre-backs were really good that day. I thought Holding was very much in his own as the defender who would sit back and let Chambers do the aggression bit of that pairing. Considering that these two youngsters are showing a bit of promise, I know Holding is suffering from some confidence, after being thrusted into the first team on occasion. But considering what we saw yesterday, do you think it's time to start integrating them into the first team and let Pear only be around if there is, an emergency? Because they clearly, as you said earlier, they bring a little more in terms of physicality, in terms of pace. What they lack in experience can be helped along with Monreal and Koscielny next to them. Were you surprised that they are not being rotated into the first team?
Yeah, I'm actually surprised, and I want Chambers or Holding to be getting more minutes in the first team because they have been doing good recently. And I think technically Chambers is a very good player, and I think he deserves the chance, and the current formation with three at the back, that would suit him. And but recently, whatever I've seen of Chambers and his loan spell at Borough, I think he has been very good and very promising. And Holding, he lost some confidence back, but I think he's gaining that again, and he has been looking very good too. And we have to look at our centre-back situation too. We know Koscielny, he has come out himself and said that he can't play two games in a week because of his Achilles problem. And Mustafi, we know there were rumours of him wanting to move out of the club. And then Mertesacker, he's retiring at the end of the season. So these are Chambers and Holding are the two future centre-backs for Arsenal. So clearly they should be getting more chances in the Premier League or in the first team. So they deserve that, and they have been doing well recently.
Do you think Wenger is trying to essentially send a message to the rest of the club, the cream of the club, that listen, I trust these young boys and I trust them in certain situations, but when it comes to the Premier League, when it comes to the physicality and the experience required in the Premier League, we need more defenders. Yeah. We need to bring in a quality starting centre back, someone in the mold of a Van Dijk or we've heard the word Kostas Manolas come up several times in our discussions. But do you think that's what Wenger is trying for? He is trying to mold the young boys to gradually move up. But in the meantime, considering that, three out of our four centre backs you just named, Mertesacker, Mustafi and Koscielny, almost on, not that level anymore. Do you think that's why he's doing it?
Actually, I don't know what message he's trying to send, because he's the one who sold Gabriel in the summer and didn't replace him. And everybody knew that Mertesacker will be retiring at the end of the season. There was that Mustafi situation. And Koscielny, obviously the club knows that he can't play two games in a week. So he should have bought a centre-back if he doesn't trust the young players. But and if he trusts them, then definitely Holding or Chambers should have been on the bench against Southampton. Especially Chambers, Southampton is his ex-club, and he has shown some promise recently. So there was no centre-back on the bench, so I don't know what was Wenger's thought behind it. But clearly that's no message, because I think if Wenger wanted, he could have easily got a centre-back in the summer, and he chose not to, so that's down to him only.
Yeah, it's a tough one. I mean, I try to think about it and make sense of it, but nothing comes to mind. Back to you, Tony. A couple of players you mentioned were Debuchy and Wilshere. Now, as you said, Wilshere was probably the best player on the pitch. Most definitely the best player on the pitch that day. My inclination that after watching that game was that since Mustafi is missing from, you know, for the weekend, or at least was suspected missing, that we might see a little bit of rotation. We might see a little bit of formational rotation. And Jack, I think, made a very strong case for to feature, you know, in a more increased capacity for Sunday's game. Were you surprised to see Jack not start on Sunday?
No, because he played 91 training session before, so they're never going to change the shape. And as I said, if you bring him in, it's probably going to be for Alexis. But as I said, he played 90 minutes. Like, literally, was it 48, 60 hours before? So, we all know I'm Jack's biggest fan, and I would love to see him play for us. But I wasn't at all surprised that he didn't come in. It does annoy me that Wenger seemingly can't see. At all times, we just look a much more dangerous side with him in it. Even when he came on yesterday, I don't think he'd done anything brilliant. He won a free kick, and pretty much that's about it. But it was the intent. It was looking to go forward, looking to beat a man. We just look more dangerous with him in the side. But I don't think, I mean, as I said, in hindsight, a lot of people are saying, oh, he should have started, and blaming Wenger for not starting him, and that's the reason we dropped points. I don't agree with that. And I don't agree that there was ever going to be a shape change, nor that there should have been. As I said, it's one training session. He wouldn't have trained on Friday because he didn't finish till 10 o'clock on Thursday night. So then he would have only trained on Saturday. You're not going to change a shape for someone who's had one training session. As good or if you think Jack's good as you think he is, or as average as you think he is if you think he's average. It's just not going to happen.
Another person that you brought up was Debuchy, and I personally think that Debuchy was, you know, the standout performer from the group stages of the Europa League and maybe even the Carabao Cup. I think he has consistently delivered, whether that be at centre back or at as full back as we saw against Bate. I think he made a very strong case to feature in the first team yet again. And as you said, that when it comes to this time of the year, when we have these back-to-back games, three games in a week sort of thing, then we will need someone to deputize for Bellerin. And Bellerin has been poor lately. So that is something that we should look out for. And do you think he'll be more readily rotated, or do you think Wenger will have to be forced if Bellerin is injured, or, you know, his performances are dipping even more?
Unfortunately, I think forced. Personally, I think he should be playing a lot bigger role. And it's not that I'm a massive Debuchy lover. I'm more of a Bellerin, I'm not going to say hater, because I don't hate him. I just don't really get what he does. He's seemingly quick for no reason. He doesn't create anything attacking-wise, and doesn't do anything defensively. Not good in the air. I think Debuchy should be involved more, but I don't think Wenger does. So I don't think he'll be included anymore. Going on to the rotation, which is a few games a week, what will happen is, obviously, he played Europa League last week. He won't play against West Ham. He won't play against Newcastle. He will then play against West Ham at home in the League Cup. And it'll be like, oh, he's just coming back from pretty much 2 years out. He's playing every other week. That's enough. He's not got it in him to be playing every week even, or every three to seven days. So that's what excuse will be used. But even if it just gives Hector a kick up the arse, which it won't do while he's only playing in the League Cup and the Europa League, just something to, because Hector's, as well as me not rating him, he's clearly rested on his laurels for a long time now. He hasn't been good for a while, if we're being honest. As biased as we want to be as Arsenal fans, he hasn't been good for a long time. And I think he's comfortable. He's got no challenge. He started off the season poorly because they'd decided they were going to play Chamberlain on the left and him on the right. And again, he had no competition. Then he had a few games where he was okay. But just in general, he's not been good enough for at least 6 months in terms of a whole. As I said, you can pick out games, and I'm sure someone will tweet us and say, but he was brilliant against such and such. And he might have been. But on the whole, he's not been good enough for a long time, and he just needs competition. And I think it would take him getting dropped for a few league games, because if it's just one, it can see it as being rested. But I think it would take him getting dropped for a few league games for him to buck up his ideas, so to speak.
No, I think you're exactly right. And I mean, on both counts, on it being forced and on Hector's recent performances. I mean, this whole season, I would argue, there have been instances, you know, where he has been in position to create something, and you know, the ball's just not there. He's just very unconvincing as a wing back. It feels like he has that pace, but if you're not able to do something with the ball the way we play, he's not been very effective. And we've seen him be effective, so it's strange that's happening. But I do hope that on Dupuzhi, me and you both are wrong, and that he is not forced, but accommodated as competition for Bellerin, because he's been really, really poor. And some of our attackers have sort of taken the pressure, without everyone else realizing that Kolasinac and Hector basically play as attackers. I mean, you know, they're being wingbacks is almost the defensive portion of being wingbacks is almost their secondary duty. But, I mean, I think in terms of the Bate performance, it was a good win. Cannot argue with six goals, was it? I don't think you can argue with that. And some good goals. I think Jack got onto the score sheet. Walcott, of course, with the opener. Giroud with the penalty. Who am I missing here, lads?
Dabushi was the opener.
Dabushi was the opener, you're right.
Goal, and Elneny was the finish as well.
Yeah, Lenny with a good finish too. Yeah. So we criticize El Nenny a lot on this podcast, but I think that finish was quite special. We face Östersund. I'm sorry if I butchered that, but from the Swedish second league, or it's the Premier League of.
No, they're in their second year in the top division in their history, and they won the Swedish Cup last year, which is how they're in the Europa League. I don't know how they're doing in the league at the moment. I'm sure someone will be a Swedish league expert, or at least pretend to be, now we've been drawn against them. They beat Galatasaray in the qualifying for the Europa League, which is never easy.
And that's
an interesting stat. The only English manager left in European competition is their manager, whose name I absolutely have no idea of. But he's the only English manager left in European competition.
Well, I think it's savvy to say that this is sort of the draw we were looking for. And, you know, considering some of the teams that fell out from the Champions League, I think most Arsenal fans will be delighted with this. Don't you think so?
Yeah. Yeah. I think it's the easiest team we could have got. I actually have not listened about them before the draw. And I was just hoping that we just don't get Dortmund, Napoli, or some of the big teams that dropped out, Atletico Madrid, that dropped out from the Champions League, and we got a favorable draw. And so I think we'll be going with the second team in this fixture at least, and then we'll see how it goes. I think it would be an easy game, but you never know. An away trip could be a tricky one, but I expect us to qualify easily to the last 16.
Tony, before our first leg against Östersund, we play Man City, I believe, and after that we play Tottenham. Considering that sandwich of fixtures, Considering the fact that Wenger will have to at some point make a decision on whether to go for the Europa League or continue fighting for the top four, would you think our game plan will be going into the game? I mean, of course, this is one of the smaller teams in, you know, in club competitions. But do you expect to see some sort of starting players from our first squad that play in the Premier League?
No, he'll remain with his team, especially for the first leg, and then reassess. I mean, I've said the whole time we've been, every podcast pretty much we spoke about Europa League, that he will play this team until he feels he absolutely has to change it. And with all due respect to them, I don't think this draw screams that you need to change it and bring in your first team players. I mean, without knowing huge amounts about them, Wenger will be pretty confident that we could go there with this current side, this current Europa League side, lose 1-0 and still turn it around in the home leg, and if needed, bring in the first team players there. And as you said, with the fixtures around that, it'll be ideal because them teams, Tottenham and City, will have European fixtures surrounding them games. So hopefully while they're having hard battles away in Turin, and I'm not sure if Man City are home or away before they to Basel before they play us. But while hopefully them teams are hard at battle, and hopefully they've had to travel and the flight taken out of them and whatnot, we've had our first team not travelling, essentially.
Yeah, I think it's a good opportunity to sort of keep moving up this competition while keeping, you know, the fight on for fourth place, depending on, or for the top four, depending on where we are at that time of the year. But yeah, good draw. I think some of the other fixtures are intriguing as well, even as neutrals. And let's see where the Europa League takes us from there. Moving on, unless you guys have any other comments. All right, moving on. Something interesting that happened, and I will start with Savvy on this. Something interesting that happened over the last, I think, week or so was the Ian Wright saga, where he had a little bit of a kerfuffle, verbal kerfuffle, with one foreign Arsenal fan who is based in Canada. Also, I think that individual actually is from London and worked for Arsenal in some capacity or the other for some time. But long story short, Ian Wright said something along the lines of foreign fans don't appreciate the sport, don't understand the sport as much as domestic fans. As a foreign fan yourself, Savvy, would you make of that, and would you make of the comments?
Actually, I didn't like the comment by Ian Wright, and it was really surprising for me because I really like the guy. However, I see him, he's a very good guy, and he, and those comments were, I don't know, they were out of anger or out of what, because the person, I don't know if he worked for Arsenal or not, he claims that he did, but it was really surprising to see Ian Wright saying that, and especially to a fan of club like Arsenal, who have a huge worldwide following. I think we have followers all over the world, and pointing that out to a foreign fan and saying it was kind of a personal attack to foreign fans. It was not good coming from an Arsenal legend. But after that, I think he's gone out of Twitter. He has deactivated his account, and I think he'll be sorry, or I think even he'll admit that it was out of proportion. So, yeah, but I think it was just out of anger, so we can just go on with it.
Tony, after this happened, of course, I think Wrighty realized that he had made a mistake and he apologized, and then he got some more abuse, and then he started, you know, obviously retaliating, as I feel any rational person would. What are your thoughts on all this? As someone who goes to the games on a regular basis, and I'm sure there are instances, you know, when you might have interacted with foreign fans, and I mean, you interact with us who are foreign fans on a regular basis. What is your takeaway from all this?
Start off, I saw it on my timeline, and I like clicked to look back at the conversation because, look, I'm not defending him at all. What he said is moronic, but I get annoyed with fans that spout opinions that are clearly clueless, regardless of where they're from. So when I first saw it, just purely seeing Ian Wright's tweet, maybe a fan, obviously foreign, but it didn't have to have been foreign, has said something ridiculous. And he said, why are you bothering talking about a game you know nothing about? Which I would have assumed was fair enough. By the time I'd seen it, this is the first I've heard that it was a Canadian fan. He'd deleted his account, so I couldn't see what it was in response to. So he's got a lot of backlash from foreign fans and English fans saying that what he said is wrong. And as a statement as a whole, it is completely wrong. And I 100% agree with that. But if that Canadian fan, as you've just said it was, as I said, the way I saw it was that he may have said something ridiculous and Wright said to him, what do you know? You don't have a clue what you're talking about, essentially. If that was the case, which I'm not sure if it was, as I said, I don't really disagree with him, but I would say that whether the fan was from a stone's throw from the Emirates or 1,000 miles from the Emirates, it makes no difference the location of where they're from. That's what I read from it. But as I said, by the time I'd seen it, I didn't get the background of it. So I think a lot of football fans, and maybe you guys notice it more than anyone else, that I get really annoyed with people that don't have a clue what they're talking about, especially, and me and Savvy spoke about this before we started recording, that people that state their opinions as facts. And I usually find the people that do that are the people that actually don't know what they're talking about. They've just heard someone on TV say it or something, and then they go, oh, it's a fact that it's like this. And it's like, well, it's not. Form your own opinion. So I think the background is key. He's come out and apologised. So I think the way I initially read it was wrong, and he has just slated foreign fans as a whole, which I find is ridiculous. But as I said, being football fans, used to guys in places where football isn't the main sport, do you guys, I'm turning the question a bit, do you guys not get annoyed at fans that speak about football but clearly don't have a clue what they're on about?
I'll take a stab at
actually,
that.
We know.
I don't really. I mean, see, this was the sort of thing I had, you know, the perception I had once this whole righty thing happened. I feel people take other individuals too seriously these days. There's no denying that I disagree with what Ian Wright said. Ian Wright disagrees with what he said. You know, he apologized right after. I think there's no denying that it was, you know, in the heat of the moment. Everyone knows Wrighty. Everyone knows his personality. He's not one of those people who, you know, who just deject foreign fans. Knowing the sort of person he is, the fan base still went into overdrive. I think it's so preposterous that we're hanging on words. We're, you know, making it a zero-sum game where even when someone is apologizing, you're giving that person abuse. And I think it's so much was made out of it for no reason, you know. Everyone has that one moment on social media that they regret because, you know, they said something in the heat of the moment or they said something in an argument, which they don't resonate with. But as a foreign fan who has been watching Arsenal for you know, more than half my young life at this point, I feel it's so unnecessary because as a football fan, as a sporting fan, you should be secure enough to realize that your love for the sport should not be hinged on what someone else says, whether that someone else is an Arsenal fan, whether that someone else is just a, you know, someone who is a public figure in football, or it's a Phil Neville, or it's a Gary Neville, or it's Gary Lineker. It doesn't matter what those people with blue ticks say, because you should know that your love for the club, your understanding of the sport is secure within yourself. Am I too off here, Savvy?
No, I think I completely agree with you. And the abuses Wrighty got, I think they were very uncalled for. And when the guy has apologized, we should just be moving on with that. He accepted his mistake. And as you said, it was in the heat of the moment. And the abuses, and especially to an Arsenal legend by Arsenal fans, it was also really very uncalled for. And I think that should not be done. Why abuse a guy for a mistake he's accepting? That was really out of proportion.
Yeah, I think it just got blown out of proportion. And I think Wrighty made a mistake. There is no denying that. As Tony said, whether you live a stone's throw away from the Emirates or you live thousands of miles away, that has no bearing on how you understand the sport and how you perceive, you know, how you perceive football. But yet again, you know, the slippery slope that is social media every now and then gives you access to these players and, you know, these legends. And sometimes they do make a slip up. There is no human in the world who is not perfect. And when they do show their imperfection, it's down to them to apologize for it and make up for it. And I think he did. But, you know, having apologized, I think some of the abuse that followed was, you know, was that extra catalyst in sort of letting him spiral. And that's unfortunate. You expect better from, you know, people you look up to. But we must not forget that these people are humans at the end of the day. And they do make mistakes. So... anything else you would like to add on to that, Tony, having listened to what we had to say?
No, as I said, I mean, look, I was speaking personally for me. I get annoyed when people push their opinion as fact, whether they're right or not, which may sound a bit hypocritical because I speak on here, but that was just my point of view. So it's doubly annoying when they're not correct, people pushing their opinion as fact. But beyond that, I can understand all viewpoints. It's just my one that it annoys me when clueless people speak about things as an expert. I mean, I'm also a fan of other sports, and the same thing happens there when people that have watched, like boxing, the main one, people have watched one fight and tell me Anthony Joshua's the best boxer ever. That winds me up. So it's just a personality thing.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, social media has given a lot of people the power to express their views. And every now and then you come across a view that you don't agree with. And in some cases where the view is blatantly moronic. But I guess there's a place in this world for everyone. So let's all hold hands and sing kumbaya. Moving on, we have a midweek fixture. We are, you know, as I said countless times, we're in that span of the year where we have those three games in the span of a week. So... lineups for West Ham. Are we playing them at home or are we playing them away?
No, it's away.
Away. Okay.
It's away again.
All right. So, Savvy, let's start with you. What is the lineup you expect for this?
Now, after seeing Mertesacker's performance, I would be expecting Chambers to come in for him. Otherwise, I think it will be the same. Oh, no, I think Ramsey has picked up a hamstring injury. Mm-hmm. So I think he'll be out and it will be a straight swap with Jack Wilshere. So I think he'll be coming in. And I want Chambers to come in because I think this formation will suit him. And or probably Holding because he's played with Koscielny and Monreal before. Last season, he has played a lot, but Chambers wasn't there. So, yeah, one of them coming in for Mertesacker and Jack Wilshere coming in for Ramsey. That will be my changes for the West Ham game.
So you're still expecting Mustafi to be out, huh?
Yeah, Mustafi, I think he'll be out for the game. He'll be back next weekend.
Okay.
The coming weekend, yeah.
Tony, thoughts?
Jack in for Ramsey, especially. I mean, to be honest, it looked like Ramsey looked like a bit of a knock at the game, the way he was moving. He was injured for a long time, but... the way he was moving, it looked like a knock. So they've come out and said it was a hamstring, which means there's no way he can play 3 days later. So I'd expect Jack to come in for him. I personally would have looked to get Koscielny out of the team just because we know he struggles with injury and playing too often. And he's been as sloppy as... I don't know how he's actually not come in for more criticism in the last week, but he hasn't. And I'm not advocating criticising Arsenal players, just what fans tend to do. But with the way Mertesacker played... he also can't play. And I don't think it'd be a good idea to change two of the back three. So I think Koscielny stays in. But had the current situation been different, I think he would have been facing a bit of a rest. Who comes in for him? Difficult, because it will mean moving Koscielny back to the middle, I'd imagine, which will then... I actually think Chambers is better suited to the right centre-back role than Holding. But Holding has performed there for us, where Chambers never has. So I think Wenger will favour Holding. And this is the one game, and I know people... I wouldn't be amazingly surprised if he changed shape. Wouldn't surprise me if he went 4-2-3-1. Because David Moyes has been very negative. To be fair, he's had very hard games. He had City and Chelsea. But he's been very negative. They've not committed many men forward. So do you need the extra centre-back? So I know people have been calling for it for ages, and I've been one of the ones that's saying, no, it will never happen. But it wouldn't surprise me if he changed it for this game. wouldn't surprise me if he wouldn't either. Either way, it wouldn't be a huge surprise, but I think this is the most likely of the recent games of him to change to a back four, especially with the players we potentially have available.
It's going to be an interesting one. I mean, West Ham just stole a result this weekend against Chelsea, right? I think they were at home hosting Chelsea,
yeah.
Who stuck with the same team that they played midweek. And I think that showed in terms of the lethargy and the fatigue. But yeah, I mean, there's no denying that such a result will give them a boost. And the result we had was not exactly that would give us one. So it will be a hard game, and it will be a game where we are required to dig deep. So I think a change of system might be warranted considering the players who are unavailable. Let's do predictions. We'll start with you, Tony.
10-0.
As always, Savvy?
Yeah, I'm going with the 2-1 win for us.
Well, you stole mine. I'll go with the 3-1 win in that case. And hopefully we can get some more momentum going into the Newcastle game. Moving on, we have some questions regarding the Southampton game and et cetera. So let's start with Savvy on this one. We have a few questions from our friend Bish today. This is one that I picked out for you, Savvy. Guardiola rejuvenated his aging squad by buying fast, young, strong players with great technical ability. Is it not time Arsenal did the same? Cech, Koscielny, Monreal need backups. Van Dijk and Koulibaly for center backs, and Butland, Keylor Navas as goalkeeper.
Yeah. First of all, I agree that we need many players, but it's not we are not playing FIFA over there that we can just look at Van Dijk and Koulibaly and just go for them and buy them. And especially with us, we are not very good in transfer market, and we are not Manchester City. We just can't go and spend £200 million in one window. They just did that. They have been spending over £100 million for the past seven, eight windows. We are not that rich of a club that we can do that. And as good as a side Pep Guardiola has, it's all down to the money he has been allowed to spend. And obviously, that is not going to happen at Arsenal, especially not anytime soon. So we shouldn't be expecting too many changes for now. We can only expect, I think, a few signings. They are needed. Everybody knows that. Let's see what our club does. Certainly, I won't be expecting us to replace 5 or 6 players in one window. That's not Arsenal. So, yeah.
There you go. Couldn't have said it better. Tony, another one from Vish is him asking us about a goalkeeper situation. He goes on to say that Ederson, and De Gea are prime examples of why title-winning teams are built around a solid defense, starting with the goalkeeper. Cech is past his best. He's too old, too slow, and does not distribute the ball well enough to start an attack quickly. Are we scouting a new goalkeeper?
I've touched on this on numerous previous podcasts that we inquired for Butland in the summer, and Stoke told us to piss off. So we are looking. We're seemingly looking at a long-term replacement. I have not had any further updates from then. But just more on the question as a whole, it's that De Gea for me is the best in the world. Ederson, no one was saying how brilliant he was until he made a double save yesterday. I agree that a good defence, the foundation of a good defence, is a great goalkeeper, but they're few and far between. And then you've got to get them as well, which is obviously difficult because every club needs one. It's not like a position where you can get away with not having one or not having one at a higher standard. Every good team has a good keeper. And there's more good teams than there is great keepers, which is what Vish wants us to sign. And it's brilliant showing ambition, but it's a lot harder than just saying we should go and get this guy and it being done. I mean, Guardiola, who obviously Vish mentioned in the last question, last summer went and brought a £20 million keeper, decided he wasn't good enough, so went and brought a £40 million one. That's literally how hard it is to get a good goalkeeper. You're looking at Like looking at Liverpool, they haven't got a good keeper or a great keeper. Dortmund, who you'd class, I know they're not at the moment, but you'd class as the second best team in Germany, haven't got a great keeper. It's a very, as I said, every team needs one. It's a very hard position to fill. One thing I do agree with Vish on is Czech's distribution is awful, but it has always been awful. I really struggle to accept that keepers have bad distribution because they literally kick a ball all day. That is probably the biggest part, well, not the biggest part of their training, but the two things they tend to train on or three across, coming for crosses, shot stopping and kicking. So the fact that any keeper can't distribute the ball really annoys me. But seemingly Czech can't and he's never been able to.
There you go. Another one from Vish, and I'll stick with you for this, Tony, before I go to Savvy for the last one, which is, why don't we train our players to better impose themselves against physically strong opponents? Every team knows that Arsenal's mental weakness is equally matched by their physical weakness. The moment a team starts getting rough, like a Watford or a Stoke or a Southampton, we start to crumble.
I read this question and I don't actually understand where it's come from. I get Vish must have been annoyed. We just dropped points. But with all due respect, I think the question is a load of rubbish, really. We lost to Watford, and it wasn't anything to do with them getting tough. We were poor. We played poor. But they got a dodgy penalty, which for me wasn't. I know some of you think it was. And an offside goal. You go to Southampton, and you say about, I don't think Southampton were rough at all yesterday. I think they defended very well, and they defended compactly. I think there was two bookings in the game, one for us, one for them, and they were both in the last 20 minutes. So I think he's trying to bracket bad results together when there's no correlation between them. Mm-hmm. Like saying, when it gets, like some people said, we're useless when it gets cold. Believe me, Burnley was the coldest game I've been to in a long time when we won it. It's, as I said, I think people are just trying to find correlations that aren't there.
Yeah, I think you're right. And in fact, I mean, Giroud's header, if anything, was a testament to his physicality. It was a very tough header with Van Dijk on him and with, you know, the frame that Forster is able to cover. I think it was, if anything, the physicality was our strong suit during that one key moment. So I think you're right. He is trying to nuzzle in all the losses and, you know, the bad performances. I don't think it's the physicality. I think it's just unpreparedness in a lot of instances. And we don't know what to expect and how to beat down defenses. And that is something that needs to be addressed.
There's this theory that goes around about our mental weakness. A team that are mentally weak doesn't score goals from the 85th minute onwards regularly. Mm-hmm. They do as a one-off, but the amount of point we've already won more points from losing positions this season than we did in the entirety of last season. That does not scream mental weakness to me.
Yeah, and the performance against Man United, I think that really showed that there have been accusations in the past, which you know arguably could have been true about Arsenal's mental weakness once we go a goal down or once we start losing the plot a little bit. But I think the performances this season have shown anything other than that. We have had some bad results, albeit, but the fortitude and the effort has been there. Some might argue with that as of yesterday, but I think that Man United performance really showed that we do have it in us to stick with the game for the full 90 minutes. Moving on to our next question, again, from Vish. Thank you, Vish, so much for all these engaging questions. Savvy, Vish goes on to say that our midfielder has been crying out for a strong defensive midfielder. Did I say our midfielder has been crying out? Never mind. Ever since Vieira left, Xhaka has still to develop into the midfield destroyer. Are we scouting anybody along the lines of Kong Dogbia, Romeu, Schneiderlin, or Nzonzi? And do you think that any of these mentioned players or any other defensive midfielders is someone we should be scouting if you're not?
Actually, I agree with the point that we should be looking for a proper defensive midfielder, and that hasn't been here for quite a long time. And I think last one who was a proper defensive midfielder was, I think, Alex Song. After that, we bought Xhaka for that thing only. But Xhaka is not a proper defensive midfielder. I think he can do a better job if he has a player who supports him more defensively and supports the team defensively, I think then he has more freedom and he doesn't have to worry about what is behind of him. Then I think his distribution is top class and then he can use it better. But he has to be safe when he's only holding midfielder. So that's why I think that is one of the reasons why we are not getting the most out of Xhaka recently. About the players, I think, even I would like a player like Nzonzi. I think he's a proper defensive midfielder who is very physically strong and who's a very strong player and a good passer as well. I don't know if we are in for him really, because there have been rumors from past 2-3 windows, and we should be looking. I would like those players. Kondogbia, I think he hasn't done well since he has moved on from Monaco, and others. Proper defensive midfielder will do for our team, and I think it's high time we get one, because Coquelin, who we thought would be future defensive midfielder, hasn't turned out to be that good, if we forget that one season where he was really good. So we clearly need one.
Do you think, Savvy, that as you were saying, I was thinking about some of the things you said, do you think we miss-scouted Granit Xhaka? Do you think he was brought in, or do you think this is just a fan perception perhaps? But I feel like he was brought in and he was, you know, perceived by all the fans, whether that's, you know, our mistake or whether that's the narrative the club followed, I don't know. But it felt like we bought an out-and-out defensive mid when he was brought in. And as you said, he is not that you know, traditional number six that you referred to.
Yeah.
So do you think we miscouted him, or do you think it was just the fans sort of looking at his, you know, disciplinary record and just assuming that he is a defensive mid?
I personally think we assume that he's that kind of player. And personally, I think he's a proper Wenger type player with a more physical attribute. But the thing is, in Premier League, in this modern game, you really need a defensive midfielder. He's not mobile enough. He's not pacey enough. I know he's technically very good, but he doesn't shield. He sits back, but he doesn't shield, or he's not very good with his defensive contribution. So, we clearly thought that we are getting a proper defensive midfielder, and we hadn't seen Xhaka enough. Only 3-4 games we had seen, and I think that was the misconception that formed that he's a proper defensive midfielder. But I remember we were in for Kante in that summer, and when we passed on for Kante to Xhaka, he's a good player, I agree with that, but he's not a defensive midfielder, and I think we should be getting one anytime soon, because it's clearly a dire need in our team. Our defense is not protected enough, and that shows with the goals we concede.
I mean, I completely agree with that. We are not good enough defensively, especially when we look at the midfield contributing to defense. Tony, on Nzonzi, there have been rumors that we've been seriously linked and that we are looking into a possible transfer with Sevilla regarding Nzonzi. Do you think there's any truth to it? And if we do bring him in, where does he fit into our team?
For me, it's similar to the Seri from Nice rumors in the summer. His agent's trying to get him a move. He has a release clause, so everyone knows the price. Sevilla are more than happy to let him go. He hasn't. I don't know if he played this weekend. I don't think he did. But prior to this weekend, he hadn't been in their matchday squad for, I think, the last 5 games. So they're happy to let him go. The price is set, and his agent is essentially whoring him around. His agent's made contact with Arsenal. I'm sure his agent's made contact with every, I don't want to say Champions League club, because we're clearly not, every Champions League / fringe Champions League club in Europe, I'd imagine his agents made contact with, who can afford the release clause. I don't think we'll go anywhere near him. I don't think we have any interest. My problem, and it goes on to a lot of, it butts into a lot of what Savvy just said. If you have him there, or if you have Kondogbia or Romeu, or who else? Sorry, I just had the tweet up because I was looking at it.
He goes on to say Schneiderlin.
Right, so how does the ball get to Ozil and Ramsey when Ramsey creates that 40-yard gap between him and his partner in midfield? With them players, it doesn't. Frankly, it completely doesn't. To say had the club misscouted him, that is literally impossible, the amount of times that they watch a player. I agree with you that as fans we got the wrong idea, but the club knew exactly what they were getting. I think Wenger thought he had the attributes to do both, and he's trying to mould him into that player. Will he ever be that? I don't know. Will he be replaced with someone that can't pass the ball? No. It just won't happen at Arsenal. The only time in recent times we've played a DM who can't really pass the ball was Coquelin, but Cazorla was never more than 10 yards away from him. And that's someone who really could pass the ball. We're trying to get someone that can do both, or we have to change both him and Ramsey, which may happen. But in terms of a straight swap, him for a pure defensive midfielder, it's not going to happen due to his partner. Savvy mentioned Alex Song. Alex Song was pretty good with the ball at his feet. He could pass the ball pretty well. You go back before that, Gilberto maybe wasn't the best passing the ball, but he had Cesc Fabregas alongside him. Like, tackle, win the ball, give it to the expert passer standing next to you. That was the old school way of being a defensive midfielder. I think in modern football, especially modern football at Arsenal, you've got to be able to do both. And the problem with Xhaka is the side he's lacking is the side that we are calling out for. We're not really calling out for players that can pass the ball. We're calling out for players that can defend. But if he was the other way around, if he was very good defensively and not so brilliant with the ball, I don't think people would moan, but you'd notice our attacks getting broke down a lot easier. I also think as well, people don't want to recognise when Xhaka does a good job. Like yesterday, bringing it back to yesterday's game, I looked at tweets at half-time and I was sitting in the ground. And everyone around me thought, oh, Xhaka's had a really solid half. He gave a ball away stupidly once or twice. But he won two, off the top of my head, he won two outstanding tackles. Exactly what you want from your defensive midfielder. One, he slotted into the defence and the other one was in the centre circle. And he absolutely wiped someone out, got the ball. And there was a 50-50 between Nacho and someone and the ball broke to us. I have not seen a single person mention that. And when I went on Twitter at half-time, with everyone around me saying, oh, Xhaka's had a very solid half, I saw people saying he was the worst player. And as I watched it back and they didn't really show anything of him. As I mentioned to you guys, the pundits on Match of the Day in England hammered him. And they blamed him for an instance when Koscielny made 5 mistakes in 20 seconds. I'm not saying he was brilliant and I'm not saying he is brilliant. But I just think with him, for some reason, we like to pick out all the points when he does something wrong, but we don't want to give praise when he does make them excellent tackles that we would like from a defensive midfielder. Like, as I said, one I was thinking of, he was one-on-one at the back with Nathan Redmond, who is very fast, very tricky, and Xhaka made a tackle that not only wiped him out, clearly won the ball, so while Redmond was on the floor, one of our players could go up and get it. It wasn't a half tackle where he's nicked the ball, but Redmond can get onto it. But I've not seen literally a single mention of them two challenges, which is exactly what we would want from a DM.
I think you make a good point there that there were a couple of counterattacks that he stopped that could have gone badly for us. And this actually brings us on to our next question, which is sent by Glenn. He talks about how the result was disappointing, and he goes on to ask that why do we have the same recurring problems at the start of the games? No way should we be conceding as much as we should this early. Would love to see the statistics on how many we do actually concede early into the games, and what needs to be done differently to prevent this. Tony?
I think, look, start off, you've got to define early. What would you say, first 10 minutes?
First 15, perhaps? 10, 15,
first 15.
Yeah.
Okay, so... All right, Man United and Southampton, last two games we have. Before that, when was the last time we conceded in the last 15 minutes? I don't know. I'm not posing a trick question. Mm-hmm. I can't think off the top of my head. So then, is it a recurring problem?
I think it's an isolated case of when it happens. It's sort of seen as a recurring problem because maybe fans have started perceiving us to be weak, and I'm certainly one of them. Going into any Arsenal game, I always fear that early goal. I don't know if it's to do with recent string of results, but it just feels like we're never that certain. We wait for the other team to sort of set the tempo, whether that tempo is them attacking us or them hunkering down and waiting for us to attack them, if that makes sense.
But isn't anything a recurring problem if you bring it up when it happens, which is essentially what you've just said. You said, oh, when it does happen, it's a recurring problem. Well, everything is. When we concede a penalty, if you think of the last 10 times we conceded a penalty, it becomes a recurring problem. So, again, I think this is another case of people making it. And again, look, I respect Glenn. I speak to him a lot. And I know he won't take this in the wrong way, and I'm not criticising him. But I think people are looking for things that aren't particularly there. And again, you saying we didn't set the pace. Huddersfield, Lacazette scored within 5 minutes. I know it's going way back. Leicester, Lacazette scored within 5 minutes. Is that a recurring issue as well? Because I've picked out twice that that's happened. You've picked out twice, well, not you, but people in general have picked out twice that we've gone behind in the first 5 minutes against Southampton and Man United. So if that's a recurring problem, then also scoring early on and setting the tempo is also a recurring thing that we have. I think, again, it's people looking for negatives because we've just had a bad result.
Savvy, thoughts?
Yeah, actually, I agree with your point too and Tony's point too. I think right now, when we go into a game, I actually kind of worry that we won't concede. And that is mostly down to the defensive errors recently we have been committing. And that's been a lot because most of the goals we concede are not due to the other team playing well. It's mostly due to us gifting them goals. By our mistakes. So that is the worry I have. Otherwise, I don't think it is a reoccurring problem that we conceded in the first few minutes. I think the only reoccurring problem is that that is of individual errors which cost us the goals. I think we should definitely take that out of our game.
Yeah, I think Glenn, your answer is within your question, because I know you mentioned that you would love to see the statistics on how many early goals we concede. I think we would all love to do that as well. And if you do, then please send them our way, because I think Tony makes a good point that there are these isolated instances and they always seem, you know, to be the same old Arsenal, if you will. But I think it just so happens that whenever it happens, which is not very frequent, because even I cannot recall when was, you know, the last time other than these two games where this happened. So it feels like it is an epidemic that we do start off slow and we are vulnerable to conceding. But I don't know if it happens that often, or at least this season. So if you do find those statistics, do send them our way and we'll be happy to talk about that even more. So I think, guys, that wraps up the podcast for today. We've gone about an hour and a half at this point. And I think we've touched upon everything. Is there any additional comments you guys would like to put on?
Can I just go through and be really boring for a second, because it's these kind of things that play in my mind and annoy me. Obviously, Southampton we conceded after 3 minutes. Bartey we didn't concede. United we conceded early, so we know them two games. Prior to that, Huddersfield we won 5-0, so didn't concede at all, let alone early. Burnley 1-0. Cologne we lost 1-0, penalty in the second half. Tottenham didn't concede. Man City, we conceded on about half hour, De Bruyne. Mm-hmm. Red Star, 0-0. Swansea, we won 2-1. We went 1-0 down, but it wasn't early. Norwich in the Cup wasn't early. Everton, you could argue we conceded early. But that's now going back into October, and there's Everton, which is arguably the only early goal. So, again, sorry, I know we've already covered this point. That was 12 minutes, I've just checked. So, I know we've kind of covered the point, but them type of things, just I'm weird like that. So we're looking at, barring them two games, it happened once 2 months ago. It's not a reoccurring problem for me.
Yeah, I think, Tony, you're exactly right. Now that you lay out those results, maybe Glenn's question would have been better off if he, instead of saying conceding early, if he had said we looked to concede early in terms of the vulnerability, because I do empathize with him on that. But I think you make a good point, too. So any other stats you might come across, Glenn, do share with us. All right, guys. So you've been listening to the Clock End Talk. Thanks for bearing with us, and you know, amidst this unfortunate result. But we will be back. Do we know when we'll be talking again, guys?
Well, we've got obviously West Ham. I think next Sunday. I think we're going to do West Ham and Newcastle in one.
Right. Yes, that's right. Yeah. And we might have a surprise for all our listeners for that podcast. So do keep in touch. Do share your questions and comments. Critiques always welcome. We try to keep it unbiased here, and we do express our bias very openly so that you guys do know when we are operating on that But yeah, thank you for your questions. Thanks once again to Glenn and to Vish for sending in all the questions. And keep it real, keep it Arsenal. Look forward to speaking with you guys soon again. Thank you, Tony, and thank you, Savvy.
Yeah.
All right. Thank you so much.
Cheers. Bye-bye.
Cheers.